Do you want? Should we do the intro?
Hello.
Hello. I'm Peter Lee, also known as the Nostalgia Nerd on YouTube.
And I'm Louie, and sometimes I pretend to be a character called Octavius on YouTube, but that's not who I am on this podcast, because that would be exhausting.
Oh, God, why am I so tired?
Sorry, give me a second.
Have you got a rat? Is there
Licky,
a rat situation?
Licky.
The rats can do what he can do what he wants. Let him do what he wants.
Right, I'm here. Sorry.
He's allowed to do what he wants.
No, he's not. Licorice was trying to climb to the top of the cage. The cage is very, very tall now. He will fall off and hurt himself.
Cool. Are we done? So same time next week?
Well, I mean, I do have this fucked up story I was going to tell you.
Oh, okay.
Actually, so I just want to say, massive trigger warning to people. I am going to have mentions in this insane story about a certain manner of sexual assault that begins with the letter R. Peter, if you could just refrain from saying the R word throughout this podcast, just because I don't want to be triggering anyone. Normally, I wouldn't want to cover a true crime case that had anything to do with sexual assault. It's just because that particular part of it, it's really not the part of it that's the main thing. That being said, it is fucked up what happened to this woman who survived, by the way. Spoiler alert, and this is why it's so amazing. It does get brutal. Just trigger warning for anyone who's like, okay, no, I'm not ready to listen to something brutal today. We'll see you on the next podcast. It's all cool.
So shit has got serious quite quickly then. We've come back and we're diving into deep topics.
Yeah.
I mean, it was quite intense last time. Some guy swallowing knives was, I would say that was quite intense, right?
Well, this is how I found out about this story. Just was trying to find out stuff, you know, absolutely insane survivor stories. It's very inspirational in quite a sort of exhausting way. So, are you ready?
I guess so.
Okay, all right.
Just go for it. Let's see how we get on.
Okay, this is the story of Alison Botha. B-O-T-H-A. I've probably pronounced it wrong, but Alison.
Botha.
She was born in South Africa in 1967 in Port Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. She had a pretty normal childhood, so she lived with her brother and her mum. She was, you know, normal, bright, bubbly girl. When she finished school, she wasn't quite sure what she wanted to do with her life, but she went travelling for a bit. So she's not afraid to get out there. Solo travelling sometimes with other people. She's really, seems like she was quite an inquisitive person and really looking for an adventure. But then when she came back home, she decided, okay, I'm going to get a job as an insurance broker.
Right, okay.
What? Which really made me laugh. I was like, this vibrant, colourful stuff. And you're like, oh yeah, insurance brokering, there we go. And she loved the job.
Maybe she got the exciting stuff out of her way. And then she's like, okay, cool. I can follow my dream.
Oh,
now.
Maybe, yeah.
You know.
That makes sense. Like, I reckon, like, definitely accountants. They were wild when they were in their teens and early 20s.
That's interesting because I've met accountants and it's hard to tell. Some of them seem like really dull, but that could easily be that they've wiped their brains out through excessive fun. And that's, you know, all that's left is like a kind of zombie accountant state. So that's the only job they can do after that.
I mean, I suppose it depends on where you work. The office I was working in when I lost my job, they had fizzy water coming out of the taps. That was amazing.
Was it supposed to be fizzy water or was the supply just a bit?
Yes, it was. No, it was.
Because that's the problem otherwise. I worked at a garage once, right? And you could get soup from the vending machine for 10p.
What?
10p soup. I know, vegetables. And it was decent as well. You'd have like your lunch break and you just like get 5 cups of soup and you'd be stuffed brimming with soup, but it cost you 50p. It was great.
I would love a soup dispenser. I wonder if Alison had a soup dispenser at her insurance brokering job. That's why she was like,
exactly.
Holy shit.
This is what I'm saying. Like, this is the first job she interviewed for where it had a soup dispenser and she's like, okay, I'm in.
Disclaimer, that probably didn't happen, just for everyone wondering.
I don't know.
She did actually write a book about this, which we should definitely link.
About the soup dispenser?
No, not this. No, she didn't write a book about the soup dispenser.
Oh, I see. About the event.
About right, everything that happened, yeah. So on December the 18th, 1994, Alison is 27 years old.
Right.
And she spends the day hanging out with her friends. They go to the beach. And at the end of the evening, I don't know if some of them were drinking, but she wasn't. In any case, she was like the designated driver. It's dark, you know, it's late. So Alison says, okay, I'll give rides to those of you who don't have any other way of getting home. So I'll drop you all off, and also I need to go somewhere to pick up laundry from my mate. She drops everyone off, she goes and picks up a laundry, she puts the laundry in a basket on the passenger side, and she drives on home. It's now approaching 3 o'clock in the morning now, so she's alone. And this is an apartment complex, so it's a car park, and normally she would park closer to the actual apartment complex underneath a street lamp. But this night, for whatever reason, presumably because she got back late, her usual parking space wasn't available anymore. She's like, oh, for God's sake. She drives just a little bit further out to the outside part of the car park, and it's further away, but it's that kind of situation where it's not like this is somewhere where people live. It's not like she's driving down the back of an alley, you know, in the middle of nowhere or anything.
It's the same car park, right?
So, yeah, yes. It's the same car park. It's just not on. It's not as close, and it's not under that particular light. But the crucial thing here is she had to sort of drive around a little bit, so she's been noticed. Unfortunately, this person has noticed that she is a female presenting person and she's on her own. She goes and settles into that spot. She turns to pick up the laundry basket, and that's when this guy flings open the driver door. Mm-hmm. And he has a knife. But before she can even react, he has this blade right up against her throat and tells her to get into the passenger seat. So she has to shove the laundry aside and she has to slide herself into the passenger seat. And he does say to her, if she doesn't shut up, he's going to kill her. Mm-hmm. Obviously, she's got no reason to disbelieve him. So she slides across. He jumps into the driver's seat, still with this knife up against her throat, slams the door shut.
Yeah.
He just starts driving. So she's stuck in this car. It's a terrifying situation for her, but she's keeping her cool. She doesn't quite know what to expect at this stage. But this guy tells her that his name is Clinton. And the reason why he's carjacked her is he literally just wants to borrow her car. That's it.
Has he heard of car rental companies?
As is kind of a clever thing to do in this situation, she tells him that she has a boyfriend. You know, she's like, oh, you know, my boyfriend's going to be home soon. Or he's wondering, you know, all of this stuff, you know, just to try and get him to think, oh, okay, so someone's going to know that she's missing. Mm-hmm. But he's not. He doesn't really give a shit. But at the same time, he's trying to make her feel comfortable and they're sort of chatting. She's thinking, okay, if I can just keep him sweet, it's okay. And he does say to her, I promise I'll let you go if you just behave. She does actually say, I believe in her book, she trusts him. She actually believes him. When he says that. Like, yeah. I don't know if that's because she's like naive. I think it might be just that she doesn't expect someone to do a horrible thing, because we're really disconnected from that sort of thing. You know, like this horrible stuff that happens on the news.
Where
and
is
things.
This?
This is South Africa.
So it's more common in South Africa, right? Isn't it? So I don't know what.
What do you mean? What's more common?
There's a lot of crime in South Africa. They have more crime than we do. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I believe so. I think their crime rates are significantly higher than us.
Do you want to go ahead and quickly Google that before we get some very angry comments?
Yes. So the rate per 100,000 population in the UK in 1994 was 1.59. In South Africa, it was 60.
Wow. All right. At the same time, I really don't think that anyone's going to pick up their laundry from their mate's house and parking in a different parking spot and thinking, oh shit, I'm going to get hijacked.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think that, no.
Clinton pulls up and this other guy gets in the back of the car.
Okay.
And this new guy, he doesn't even try to be cordial. She's looking at him in the rearview mirror and he is staring her down. And that's the moment she knows, I'm in trouble now. Mm-hmm. So we're going to quickly talk about these two guys. They've both given her false names.
Yeah.
They are one Franz de Toits. I don't care if I pronounced his name correct.
No, he can go and
fuck himself.
Yeah.
And Thurns Kruger, again, probably pronounced that wrong. I don't even care. Go and fuck yourself. And these two men, they are sorry to use that word very rudely. So I have this thing where I think that okay people can do bad things and they can be rehabilitated and they can be shown what they've done wrong and they can genuinely apologize for what they've done and feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. These two guys though, so at the time that they've just abducted Alison, they're already out on parole because they are worded to other people.
Yeah.
they've already got a history of violence on women, these two. Okay. They're out on parole and they're just fucking walking around.
Okay.
It's messed up. And I was trying to look up, like, what so they're on parole. So they've been to prison already for doing this. What are the conditions of their parole? Like, why is it that they're allowed to hang out together?
I mean, maybe they're not, but I mean, I'm sure the conditions of their parole are they're not allowed to conduct serious crimes, but they're doing
that
anyway.
Well, yeah, you would think that. So I don't know if they had ankle tags or something. I have actually ordered Alison's book, so part of me thought maybe I should read it first, but no, I think I would prefer that listeners to this podcast will go and read her book as well, because obviously I am missing out so much stuff, and I hope I'm not getting anything wrong, but... Yeah, I don't even know if they were ankle tagged. I don't know what the situation was in the mid-90s when it came to parole. But...
Not sure, especially in South Africa. I mean, it's a very area we don't know much about, really. So,
well, we personally. Don't say it as if it's like, oh, we don't know much about it, like, you know, like the surface of Mars.
No, it's not a grey area of history. It's like we know nothing about it. It's like we've got the crime stats, but nothing else. No, I mean, it's just we personally do not know much about it.
Yeah. So this is, it's going to get dark.
It's already quite dark.
Yeah, I know. So these fucklets, they're in this car with Alison. And what she doesn't know is that they do have plans. They have plans to our word her. And they didn't kill their previous victims, but they're already expecting to kill Alison.
Mm-hmm.
Franz and Theans tell Alison, okay, we're going to have sex with you. They ask her, are you going to fight if we do that? And she's trapped. She's terrified. She says, no, I'm not going to fight you. The article on Vocal Media, which we'll link in the description, quotes from her. She was thinking, during this whole thing, she was thinking, it's okay, let them R-word me because I can survive this. I've got this. I can get through this. I can go home. I can go to the police. I can tell my family. My parents are going to support me. He was doing this to your body. Not you, because he can never really touch you. And that last sentence, when I read that, I sobbed. He is doing this to your body, not you, because he can never really touch you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is an incredibly powerful sentence. Yeah. And this is what would help her get through what was about to happen, because yes, they pulled up the car and they proceed to sexually assault her. What they did to her was... so angry and ferocious that she would end up being told she wasn't going to be able to have children.
Okay, that's pretty fucked up.
Like, oh, the fact that people like this exist just makes me sick.
Yeah, it's not great.
After they'd done what they'd done to her, obviously they move on to the idea of killing her. So first up, they try and suffocate her. They try and strangle her.
Mm-hmm.
Alison did lose consciousness. They strangled her so hard that she did actually pee herself. And this is going to be important in a bit. But she's still alive. The pair of these assholes are like, oh, for fuck's sake. So yeah. they're really annoyed that she's not dying. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the level of twattery that these two are. They're like, oh, I've done this to you and you're not fucking dying. How dare you?
This seems far more visceral than the Michael Malloy case. It seems already, it's like, Jesus Christ.
This is when they get even more horrendous, right?
Okay.
They get the knife.
Right.
They stab her.
Okay.
At least 30 times in her abdomen.
Okay.
At least. Just stab, stab, stab. And Alison actually recalls that Franz de Toit, or twat. You know, it's pronounced Franz du Toit.
Let's just call him de Toit. That's fine.
Yeah, shall we just call him de Toit?
Just call him de Toit, yeah. The Twat brothers. That sounds good.
Yeah, the Twat brothers. Oh my God. Yes. Alison recalls later that she reckoned that Franz did want to mutilate her reproductive organs. So there's obviously some severe misogynistic rage in there somewhere.
Well, this shit is getting really dark, isn't it? Our podcast has taken a very dark direction.
The survival story is just incredible.
Yeah, hang on. Yeah.
And, you know, she's on the floor, she's bleeding everywhere, but somehow... they missed specific parts of her organs that would actually have killed her.
Every time. Fucking hell.
Yeah, I know. I mean, for one, you bumbling fuck.
I mean, they are
two,
fucking fucking twat brothers, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, obviously. She's lying there and they think, okay, yeah, she's dead. But then her leg twitches. Mm-hmm. So they get the knife and they slit her throat 16 times.
Okay. Fuck's sake. Okay.
Yeah. And writing about it later, Alison says, all I could see was an arm moving above my face, left and right and left and right.
Jesus Christ.
His movements were making a sound, a mm-hmm. wet sound. It was the yeah. sound of my flesh being slashed open. Her body makes her feel like she's in a dream. It zones her out. You know, like yep. a little bit of an out-of-body experience. As
I guess it would have to, yes.
Because they think that she's dead at this point, they leave. I think they take a car, actually.
It's a fucking shitter, isn't it?
Yeah,
take a
I know.
Car
that's,
as well.
Yeah, so she's there in the wilderness. I think she was naked at this point. She is in a real mess.
Yeah.
And she thinks, okay, I need to make sure that these two fuckers get caught. So she just about manages to lift up her arm and she writes the names of both of them in the dirt, Franz and Theans.
That's pretty good, yeah.
And then underneath that, she writes, I love Mum. And she realises the damage that has been done to her after she's been lying there for quite a while. She tries to get up onto her hands and knees. And that's when her intestines fall out of her body.
God, okay.
And onto the ground.
Fuck, right. Jeez, okay. Fucking hell.
Can you imagine that? Because we were talking about with Vicky Malloy, like, the stuff, sorry, not Malloy, the other guy, the sailor, the absolute mad piece who was yeah. eating knives. Yeah. Stuff getting through the intestines. The intestines go on forever, but yeah. they sort of flop out. Are you okay?
No,
are you
I'm
having
gonna
a difficult time?
I'm going to stop having conversations with you. I don't like it.
No, what? This is an incredible story.
Okay, it's not so far, it's not. It's a fucked up story.
No, incredible in a, you know, an amazing way rather than, oh yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, but we're not at that point yet, are we? We're at the point where we know that she's clearly Michael Malloy's descendant and that's all we've got. And she's been fucked up horrendously.
Yeah.
It's not good as it stands. What is there some good here? There's some good shit happen.
It's going to happen, okay?
Okay, good.
Right.
Yeah, I just want to make sure because I can't take much more of this.
Okay, right. She thinks really quickly and she grabs her shirt, which was, it was made out of denim, which is, this is an important thing because if it wasn't denim, it wouldn't have worked. She lies back and she puts her intestines back in.
Oh, God.
Shoves them back in.
It's literally like a horror film.
It absolutely is. She wraps the denim shirt around her abdomen, mm-hmm. ties it up so that she can keep everything in.
Yeah.
When I think about, like, what would I do in this situation,
I wouldn't have even been able to write the names in the
sand. No,
I'd
no,
be like,
I wouldn't.
I'd be like, okay, game over.
Yeah.
I'm good. I probably wouldn't have, yeah, survived any of this. So
yep,
I mean, she's obviously very tough.
Or as you described it last time, a triple hard.
I think she's more than triple hard. She's like at least quadruple hard.
Yeah. So once she's done that, she's wrapped herself up. Mm-hmm. She tries to crawl along on her knees towards, you know, the road. Yeah. See if she can flag anyone down. But the problem is keeping her intestines inside her, even though she has got this wrap around, it's too difficult for her to be moving as well, because obviously, you know, she's messed up, she's weak, she's bleeding.
Yeah, she must look like a literal zombie, and she's got blood coming from her neck, right?
Yep, exactly.
Oh.
So she realises she's going to have to stand up. She concentrates on standing up. She sits back onto her knees, pushes herself up with her hands, and up she stands, and that's when she blacks out.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, sometimes I pull a muscle, you know, in like my stomach or something, and I can't move. It's really painful. So imagine standing up after having your stomach slashed open.
Yeah.
I mean, that must be excruciating. I can't even imagine that.
Well, I wonder how much of the pain was taken away from the shock.
Even still, I mean...
I don't know if you can deal with this.
Well, me personally?
Yeah, because... No. The reason when she stood up, everything went black. There's a reason for that.
Okay, well, because...
And it's not because she passed out.
Right.
It's because she brings her hand up.
Yes, yeah.
To touch her throat where it's bleeding.
Yeah.
And her hand goes into her throat.
Ah!
Because her head... Yay! Her head had flapped back.
Ah!
Like a lid.
Why are you doing this? Oh.
Her head...
What the fuck?
...is... barely held on.
It's January. This is not a good start to the year.
Her windpipe has been completely cut through.
How is she breathing?
You don't need your mouth to breathe. It's her lungs are doing the breathing.
If you slit someone's throat, they die, right?
They did not cut through the main artery. They cut through the windpipe. They cut through everything else.
Is that what kills you, the artery?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
yes, the main artery. They also avoided her voice box, which is going to be very important in a bit.
Okay, but like, so, if your head flops back, doesn't that then pull the artery out?
I'm not sure entirely what happened. I wanted to try and find out exactly what the situation is with somebody's neck that would make it that she survived that, but her head flops back.
Okay.
The spine is still there.
Okay.
The main artery is still there.
Yeah.
Everything else, I mean, there's like a gurgling coming from her throat.
Yeah. Do you remember when we used to have fun doing podcasts and talk about joyful things?
I think this is an incredible story.
I just remember we used to make jokes and stuff like
that. No, this story made me just gasp so many times.
I am gasping at the moment, yes. Okay, carry on.
So she has to put her hand behind where her head normally would be, and she has to push her head back on.
Okay.
So she has to flop her head back onto the stump of her neck.
Yeah.
And she has to hold it down there.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
No.
No.
Can we just carry on? Just get the story done.
She's with one hand, she's holding her head. Mm-hmm. The other hand, she's holding her intestines in.
Mm-hmm.
And very slowly, she's walking towards the main road.
Yeah.
And when she gets to the main road, she gets into the middle of the road and she just collapses.
Okay.
She's got this, she's completely naked, but she just has this denim jacket around her.
Yeah.
Soon enough, a car appears. This car obviously sees her, and this car drives past her and speeds off. When she talks about it afterwards, she says that she wasn't angry or anything because she understood why they didn't stop.
Like if you saw someone in those conditions, you'd be freaked out, right?
Oh, I mean, I guess I'd be scared, but I think if it was somebody covered in blood and, you know, a female presenting person on the road, I'd stop.
Yeah, of course you'd help. Of course you'd help them.
Yeah.
But that must be pretty fucking harrowing.
I would be like, what the shit? Like, what happened? Also, I'd be like, are the people that did this to her still around?
Yeah. If you were in a reasonable mind, you would stop. But that's the thing. Exactly. If there's like high crime and stuff, and you don't know if someone's trying to mess you about to do a carjacking or something like that.
There's
so many things going on.
Yeah.
So we don't know what this person's thinking, do we, basically?
A little while later, another car approaches, and this one did actually stop. And it was full of people. They were on holiday in Port Elizabeth.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like, imagine that. Imagine you're on holiday in frigging Benidorm or something, and you end up accidentally bumping into someone who's just had the most horrific shit done to them.
Yeah.
Like, that's definitely going to... That's going to put a damper on things.
You're going to remember that holiday, that's for sure.
One of the people in this car was one Tian Eilert. Mm-hmm. I've probably pronounced their name wrong as well. He was a veterinary student. He gets out of the car and he rushes to her side. The first thing he does is he takes her hand just to let her know that everything's going to be okay, which is this really, really beautiful moment of human connection, I think. And that made her immediately feel so much safer. So this guy immediately tells his mates, call the police, like, get on the fucking phone right now. I don't know how that worked, though, because this is 1994, so they wouldn't have had mobile phones, would they?
I mean, they might have had one of those massive mobile
phones. One of those massive ones, yeah, absolutely.
Car phones existed. Or I imagine there was probably pay phones, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah. I suppose they
nearby.
Must have. Yeah, they must have done that. Because in 1994, like, wouldn't the phone would be literally half the size of the car?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
They wouldn't have been able to pack it for the people because the back seats would have literally been taken up by a
mobile
phone.
Literally just a massive... He's like, you need to call the police. They're like, oh.
It's like, get the phone out. There's like four of them walk over to try and pull it out. They're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Like... fucking buttons the size of their palms just trying to mash the
buttons
down.
He's just smashing the buttons. Like, 999 for fuck's sake. Tian is, I think he was in his second year of vet school, so he knows enough to do pressure points on her neck to try and stop her from losing as much blood. the really important thing was that she wasn't to lose consciousness. So he just kept talking to her, keeps talking to her. He does have to look underneath her denim shirt, and I don't think nobody could have prepared him for what he saw when he pulled back that shirt.
Yeah.
Even a vet.
Second year vet, yeah. I mean, it's not even a doctor. Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure at that point he's not seen the intestines literally hanging out of someone.
He's probably sedated a few rabbits, you know, or maybe like operated on a cat's foot. He hasn't seen a human's bowels hanging out. God.
He keeps himself calm because he doesn't want to freak her out. And one of the articles does say that at this point, he really doesn't think that she's going to be making it, but she's...
No.
But he's holding her hand, he's comforting her. He obviously knows that somebody did this to her, and he wants to make sure that whoever it was gets caught. He's talking to her, he's asking, you know, what's going on, and she can't talk really, obviously, because her throat's cut. So he gets her to squeeze his hand, like, once for yes and twice for no. So just during that time, he is able to get quite a lot of information from her. He has to keep her awake. But the thing is, he has to do it for 1.5 hours. 1.5 hours.
Jesus Christ.
And I was trying to work out what was going on with
her. How is she not bled to death?
I don't know. I mean, he's there doing compresses on her for this long. When they, according to the article, when the police were called, they were like, okay, an ambulance will be there in 15 minutes. So it's not like this place was completely out in the sticks or anything. But then one doesn't show up for 1.5 hours. And I'm thinking, what the fuck else was happening that there was a priority?
A bit like that case doesn't seem urgent. As like,
what the fuck was going on where ambulances were needed elsewhere?
Maybe they thought, she's definitely going to die, so let's not bother. I have no idea. We can only speculate.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe they thought that someone was taking the piss.
Maybe. No, maybe they couldn't find them. Who can know?
Finally, they get there, and I'm sure I wrote a note that he got in the ambulance with her because she wouldn't let go of his hand, which is really heartbreaking. That was the moment that he decided, I'm going to be a doctor.
I mean, you would be, wouldn't you? I mean, after that, you're like, well, I've seen the worst of it now, so I might as well go all out.
That's
become a doctor.
Like, instant hard mode, isn't it? It's like, you play a game and you do like, right, okay, hard mode, absolute fucking bullet hell, freaking intestines hanging, like, Jesus.
I'm surprised, like a professor from Oxford didn't just walk over and give him his, like, diploma right there. It's like, okay, you are a qualified doctor.
You kept a woman alive whose head had flapped back like a
literally,
fucking lid.
Literally.
And didn't have any intestines in her body. Mate, here's your doctorate.
Like, exactly.
Bloody hell.
It's like straight into the operating room. You're good to go.
Yeah.
He's like, what the shit?
He's like, what's going on? Yesterday I was operating on a cat's foot. What's going on?
And then now I've got to do brain surgery on some guy. Like, Jesus Christ.
They get her to the hospital and obviously everyone there's like, what in the utter shit? They're like, how the hell is she alive? What in the absolute shit?
I imagine that phrase was used a lot throughout this entire thing.
For one thing, they have to shove a pipe, a kind of pipe, plastic pipe thing, down into her windpipe and then sort of settle her head onto it, you know? Like, so there's a pipe running through her windpipe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a very nice thought, is it?
This is a nice thought.
No, it's not. Because she peed herself when she was being strangled, the doctors at the hospital later said that if she hadn't have done that, she would have died because her bowels would have exploded during the stabbing attack.
Okay. Yeah.
And that would have killed her.
It's like a fortunate... It's like a fortunate set of events, although it's not a fortunate set of events.
Yeah.
It's a very unfortunate set of events.
Yeah.
It's not a Lemony Snicket book, is it?
No, it's not. Apparently, because they cut her windpipe, that did actually keep her alive.
Well, because it wasn't filled with blood?
Well, yeah, because the connection between her lungs and her mouth.
Yes, was damaged. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose she was breathing out of her neck, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like when you put those little things through your neck, isn't it? You can get those little things, they stick through your windpipe to help you breathe if there's like a serious problem.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, I had no idea what you were going to say then. I was like, because the way you said it was as if it's something that you can get down at the newsagents on like the sweet aisle.
It's like, have you got like a windpipe prick? It's like, no, all sold out today. They all mad rush on them this morning. All sold hundreds.
We don't. Sorry, just for anyone listening, we don't want to sound disrespectful. We're just sort of dealing with the horror with a little bit of humor.
I mean, I'm trying to deal with it with humor, and then the bottom part of my legs are kind of like shaking to maintain. You know, when you sit there, kind of like agitated. Because it's like, I don't want to deal with this, but so I'm just going to move around instead.
For me, the worst, there is a real rage in me that two absolute twats had the audacity. Like, I know that sounds insincere, but this idea that you can just go and fucking do that to someone just because they are of a gender, of a sex, which is usually seen to be as physically weaker. And of course, against two men, she didn't have a chance. You know, she wasn't a big girl, you know. And it's just, it makes me so fucking enraged. Like, when I've had it online, I've had male presenting people usually tell me, well, you complain about having been sexual harassed or everything, but then you have cute selfies on your page. Like, what is it? That pisses me off so much. God. Like, let me just get in my soapbox for a minute. It doesn't matter what you look like or what you are wearing. There is not a single person listening to this right now who was being sexually assaulted who deserved that.
It's
just the fact that you are female is enough for some of these disgusting cunts. It doesn't matter what you look like.
It's so fucking entitled. It's such a victim-blaming mindset. It's like, oh, you've done this. It's like, these people don't exist for you, my friend.
Nope.
They don't exist to satisfy whatever whims you think are going on. It's like, they're just having a nice time. They're trying to, and you come along and fuck it up.
Yeah.
It's fucked up, but we have to say that, isn't it, really?
So the fact that Alison, we're going to find out later that, she does take it to court. After everything that's happened to her, this strength, and I'm not saying that anyone who's experienced this stuff and then doesn't take it to court isn't strong. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that so many people listening to this right now have had something happen to them completely outside of their consent in a sexual manner, and they have dropped the case because they knew that they weren't able to deal with it at that time. And then they've blamed themselves. Do not blame yourself, okay? Mm-hmm. If you couldn't go through it at that time, what happened was not your fault. Yeah. Everything is on these absolute arse baskets that do this kind of thing.
100%.
This is why I wanted to talk about this, because it is incredible. Just really, really someone to look up to.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just going to get off my soapbox now. You should have pushed me off it. You should have been like, no,
you
seem okay.
You seem to be enjoying it, and it needs to be said, so you go for it.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Pia. So she can't speak. The police come along. So she has to start writing stuff down. But because she can't talk to the police, right? So the police, I think the detectives, they go away, and then they come back and they say, look, we need you to say the names of these men. We can't just have you write it down. You have to say it.
Why?
I would be interested to know why. I think it's just because the detectives were like, we need to fucking get these guys. So we need to make sure that every single box is ticked. So we need you to say it, and we need to record that you said the name. So there's like, no. So then the defense wouldn't be able to be like, oh, well, she wrote down this, but maybe her spelling was different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So even though this is going to cause her absolute agony, she writes, take the tube out, I will say their names.
Mm-hmm.
So they take this windpipe tube out and, you know, prop her up so that she can say the names. With that, all of the information that they have and everything, the police, of course, these two fuckers are on parole, so it's not difficult for them to find them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they caught them pretty much immediately.
Okay, that's good.
Charging them for, you know, the kidnapping and everything. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that they do is they're like, I'm sorry, what? She's alive. Like, what the shit? They had no idea. They were not expecting her to be alive. So they're completely blindsided.
Well, they've incriminated themselves by doing that. So that's
good. Oh, yeah, yeah. They're like, what?
She's alive? We fucking killed her.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, they're such... Oh my God. Yeah.
Stupid as well.
And this is where I feel like your blood is going to start boiling.
Oh.
They take him in and they start questioning. I think he's just like a standard, you know, knobhead. I think he...
Do you mean
Twat brother number two.
Twat two, right, okay.
As far as I can gather, his interviews were pretty much straightforward. But Franz...
Twat one.
He says, well, the reason why this was happening is because there's a demon trapped inside me, and it told me to do all of those things because I'm a Satanist, and the Satan in me told me that I need to go and do this, and I need to kill to feed the demon. And the police are like, right. All right, mate.
Okay, I better let you off then. Time, you know, off you go. It wasn't you, it was the demon.
Obviously, this guy's not a Satanist because...
Satanism's actually a good religion, though, but if you look into it,
it's absolutely.
Morally.
I've got a Baphomet upstairs. I've got a Baphy because the whole concept of Satanism is just, it's so humanist and it's all about complete equality and mindfulness. And Satanists do not believe in Satan. Satanists do not believe in a hell or devil or any of that kind of paranormal stuff.
Yeah.
At all.
But this guy obviously just thought he's like, oh, I've been possessed by the devil. I'm going to say anything to try.
Yeah, exactly. So because he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, he calls himself a Satanist because he's got no fucking clue. So it's like, oh, the demon, and it was Satan possessed me. Like, I think he actually does say in the court documents, yeah, Satan possessed me and I had to do this thing. Which, for one, obviously, fuck off, that didn't happen. But also... What is this idea where, oh, I was possessed by a demon? What, so that means that the fucked up shit that you did, you're not going to be punished for it, yeah? Is that what you're saying?
If you've been possessed by a demon, it's best to lock you up, son, so it doesn't happen again. It's not good logic.
In terms of lawmaking, everything, I suppose everything moves on relatively quickly because they were taken to court August 1995 and they were found guilty. Mm-hmm. And that is when they were both of them sentenced to life in prison. Finally, Alison obviously is just trying to go on with her life.
Yeah.
And she's only 27, so she's quite young still. She goes on to start telling her story, really, and becoming just a general inspiration. Mm-hmm. She wrote a book, as I said at the start. It's called I Have Life.
She has about 9 lives, I think. Jesus.
She got married, and she had been told that she was never going to have children. Mm-hmm. She proceeded, because she's a bad bitch, to have children.
Okay, impressive.
And wonderfully, Tian, who was the guy who found her in the middle of the road and held her hand and looked after her and everything, like I say, he decided he was going to become a doctor. He actually became a gynecologist and he delivered one of her kids.
Oh, God, that's impressive. And was she okay, other than like the horrendous trauma? I mean, physically, was she all right? Did she... Yeah. Was there any problems?
I mean, you're always going to have, after something like that, there's always going to be...
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I think on the whole, she had a pretty solid recovery. I mean, obviously, she's got a lot of scars and everything.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, she doesn't need to have a thing in her throat or anything like that.
That's impressive. So if you put her with Michael Malloy, that's like the hardest fucking crew
to
ever exist, right? They could just take on like an entire team of like wrestlers and anything. God.
But here's the thing. So we've not quite finished with those two twats yet.
Oh yeah, I forgot about them.
We've got to do a little bit more blood boiling first. So as I said, they were sentenced to life without parole.
Mm-hmm.
However, there was a political change, which at some point down the line said, I think it was probably in 2004, the law changed that any prisoner who was sentenced before October 2004 would be eligible parole, even if they had been put in prison, not eligible for parole.
Mm-hmm.
So these fuckers start being eligible for parole.
Fuck's sake.
October 2015, that's according to the Vocal Media article, they were determined not to be put out on parole, but every 2 years that was going to be reassessed, which... boils my piss. Like, every 2 years. It's as if they're like, okay, so you guys are still cunts. Okay, we'll come back in about 2 years. Oh, you're still cunts. Okay, we'll come back in... Like, excuse me, 2 years? How is that enough time?
Yeah, it's like, what have you done in those 2 years? Oh, I've read some philosophy books. I'm okay now.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem.
I've dealt with my massive, horrendous misogyny problem.
The demon has been excised from my body. I'm good to go.
Franz, you know, twat number one.
Yeah.
He has some audacity, right?
Oh, we know that.
So Alison's going off. She's killing it. I mean, she's doing talks. She's being an advocate. She's doing all of this work. You know, she's got this book. The book is turned into a film. She's doing amazing.
Oh, there's a film?
Yeah. The film is called Alison.
Okay.
Franz, he's not happy with that.
Right.
So this twat's in prison.
Yeah.
And
he doesn't want a cut of the revenue, does he?
Oh, he wants a cut of the fucking revenue.
He wants a cut of the revenue.
Yep.
What, for being part of a story?
Yep.
Jesus
so
Christ.
He gets wind that there's a documentary about it, and he wants to be in it. He wants to do an interview for it.
Okay.
And to do that, he is demanding that, for start, Alison's book sales and all of her speaking and everything that she does where she's going around, you know, she's doing amazingly. He wants a profit share of that because, and listen to this, because he reckons that the only reason she's so successful and has all that money is because of what he did to her.
Oh, for fuck's sake. So he's claiming ownership of all this.
Yeah.
He's like, this is me, my doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that demon that was in him before.
Absolutely.
No, that's gone.
Fucking piece of shit. Unless this is the demon speaking. The demon's like, oh, I can make some money now. That'll be useful in hell. Let's get some of that going. Absolute cretin.
Because, like, on one hand, it's like, well, yeah, if you hadn't have been such a bumbling fuck. The thing is, I really do believe that she seems like the kind of person who would have found this amazing success
anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Like this set of circumstances, you created this horrific set of circumstances, but she's the one who survived, who pulled through it, who made something of it. It wasn't anything to do with you, you fucking miserable piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What? Just get the fuck out. Get wrecked, mate.
But no, I've got one more thing for you that he did.
Right.
He also wants one other thing. Do you want to guess what it is?
To be released from prison?
No.
A pair of Nikes?
No.
I don't know. A Caesar salad.
He demands a letter of forgiveness.
Forgiveness?
From Alison.
What do you mean forgiveness?
And he wants her to sign it. He wants her to write it herself. And he wants her to send it.
Oh, this guy can get fucked. This guy can get fucked down a fucking hellhole. Him and his demon can get dragged to the deepest depths of fucking earth and just burn the fucked. What the fuck? Forgiveness? Forgiveness for what? For enduring his fucking horrific shit? What an absolute piece of fucking shit.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Unsurprisingly, those demands were absolutely not met.
Good. Absolute fucking audacity. It's like, haven't you done enough, sunshine? You need to come back here and just, you know, dredge that fucking sewer a bit more. Fuck.
The fact that he is demanding her to forgive him as well.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Entitlement?
People do say, you know, you should forgive and forget. So I it depends.
There's levels though, right? There's a cut-off point.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm good.
I don't like it when people say you should forgive and forget because... It's up to you how you deal with these kind of traumas.
Yeah, okay, forgive and forget isn't... No, you don't need to do that. You can accept what's happened to you, and that's a good route to go down, but you don't need to forgive anyone.
I actually do love that she didn't send him a letter saying that she forgives him, because, like I say, she seems like such a kind person who really saw the good in everyone. So when I read that, I was really worried that she might have sent him a letter saying, I forgive you.
Yeah.
Because some people say that when you forgive your abusers, you are taking the power from them. I don't believe that at all. What I want is for her to have sent him a letter that just said, fuck you.
Get
just
fucked.
Massive black letters, maybe glitter on the edge of it. Go and fuck yourself.
Or loads of like those sparkly shapes inside the envelope. So when you open it, they all burst out. And it's like,
yeah, like
oh, this
glitter.
Is beautiful. And
explosion.
It's like, yeah. And he's like, get fucked. God, okay. What's her book called again?
I Have Life.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to buy this now, aren't I?
But sadly, we end on a bit of a difficult note.
Okay. I mean, we started on a difficult note. Jesus.
And I know. This has been a rough one. But after serving 28 years,
yeah,
the Twat brothers were granted parole.
Ugh.
Just this last year in July 2023.
Right, okay.
And on her Facebook page, Alison wrote, quote, "The day I hoped and prayed would never come. When I was asked, how will you feel if they ever get parole? My immediate answer was always, I'm hoping I never found out.
Well, that's a pretty... I mean, it's a good story of survival, but it's pretty horrific that they've been let out. It's a mixed bag. A mixed bag.
And also, the fact that medical science was able to rescue someone like that, it's just, especially the fact that her head flopped back, like, that's...
I don't want to go back there, to be honest, because... I find that traumatic, and I'm not even her. Or I wasn't even part of the scene. I wasn't involved in any way. I haven't even seen it, but I can imagine it, and it's fucking ghastly. So,
are you going to watch the film?
I might do, actually. Depends if that bit is in the film. I presume
obviously,
we have to show...
Obviously, that's a very, very key part of it.
This must be like an 18, right? This film must be like pretty...
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah. Have to watch it. Do you want to watch it together?
What? Are you saying that because you need somebody to hold your hand?
A little bit, yes. anything else?
Are you okay?
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm fine.
I am a little bit exhausted after that. I mean, I hope listeners thought that we dealt with that in a compassionate and careful way, because obviously this sort of thing, I mean, we don't have a true crime podcast. It is difficult. To talk about something like this.
It's horrendous. It's horrendous to inject humour into it to try and make it, you know, to cope with it as well.
Yeah.
It's just difficult to navigate around it. And it's worse because it's fairly recent as well. You know, if you're talking about something from 200 years ago, it's a bit easier to tackle. But when these people are literally still alive, it's like, oh, fucking hell. That's good Lord. Next time... I'll pick the topic. How about that? And then we'll have a nice time. How about we do that?
I've still got plenty of other things to tell you about.
Oh,
that
God.
One's
I
probably
think, no.
The most brutal.
No. I think you're banned from topics from this point forward.
What?
Are you editing this one? Yes, you are. You are editing this one. I'm not editing this one. I refuse. I completely refuse. Cool. I guess we should fuck off then, right? And
right. Okay.
Come back for the next one.
All right. Well... thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope that wasn't too intense. It's certainly a little bit different than what our other podcasts have been, but it's kind of, you know, I think it's good to have that sort of thing talked about now and again.
Yep, thanks very much, and we'll see you for the next one.
Bye!
Bye!
Bye!